Across the Desk with Clement Manyathela on 702.
So on Across the Desk this morning, I'm hosting young professionals, and I want us to just get a sense of the dynamics of their work, their experience as young professionals in the workspace. And I think this is something I relate to because, as I said to you earlier, over the period of my career, I've probably been the youngest or among the youngest among my colleagues. As it stands now, I indicated to you that I am the youngest host on 702. And there are disadvantages that come with that, but there are also benefits that come with that. So I want us to have a discussion about the dynamics of being a young professional in the workspace. What are the pressures? What are the challenges? What are the advantages? You know, what do they love the most about that? But I want you to join the conversation as well. Are you a young professional? Doesn't matter what industry you're in. Give us a call on 011-883-0702 to share your experiences with us. You can send your WhatsApps as well, 072-702-1702. Tell us what your experience has been. And maybe you're not young now, but you do remember a time when you were the youngest in the workplace. What was that like for you? I'll take your calls and WhatsApps on that. Let me introduce you to my guest this morning. We've got Harrison Mkhize, who is 29.
Yes, yes.
Kanjani.
What do you mean?
Well, you sound mature.
Really?
I mean, yeah.
Yo, guys, please don't be swindled by me.
You could swindle people because I really thought you're probably 32.
No ways. I'm only 29.
29.
Born in 1994.
Yeah, and you're a teacher.
And I'm a teacher.
When
by
did
profession.
You start being a teacher?
I started teaching 7 years ago.
7 years? So you were what?
I was 23-ish.
23.
Yeah.
My goodness. Okay, we'll find out more about that journey. We also have Clarissa Skiepas, who is a lawyer. You are 24 years old.
Yes, I'm the baby.
You are the baby one here in the studio. Thank you so much for making
thank
time for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
We also have Xoli Mgletshe, who is a doctor. You are 31.
Hi.
You are the big sis.
I know. I feel older than everybody in this room.
Well, I'm 33. Okay.
You're making me feel better. Thank you.
I'm the older one. Thank you so much, guys, for making time for us. So, Harrison, I want to start with you.
Sure.
You do teaching.
Yes.
But you're also in television. You're also in radio.
Yebo.
First of all, where do you find the time to do all these things?
We all have the same 24 hours. I wake up in the morning, I go to work, I go teach, and then straight after school, I'll go record stuff that I have to record for TV, and then straight after that, I'll go and I'll be on radio. Like,
yeah.
It's like one after the other, after the other, after the other.
How did you get into teaching?
I got into teaching because I went to UKZN and I studied a BEd, and then I applied for a job and I got it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers you, but, you know, in high school, I had the ability to explain things to people in simple ways that they could understand. And I always helped my peers in high school. And so when my teachers was like, you're actually quite good at this. Why don't you go study education?
Yeah.
So I looked at the subjects that I loved, which was physical science and English. And I was
physical science?
Yeah.
You loved physical
science? I loved physics.
Science.
What do you mean? We've got numbers and words.
I hate numbers.
No. Just, you know, if you have words to explain the numbers with physics, it actually works out. And yeah, and then I went to UKZN, got a BEd, did an honors, and the rest is history.
Yeah. And for you, Clarissa, how did you get into law?
So I personally really loved writing and English and logical reasoning, and law was just a natural transition. Also, I really like the fact that I talk smack for a living, so.
Were you the chacha at home, like you were arguing with everyone?
Oh, yes. My brother is like that poor thing. Yes.
Yeah. Wow. And then what about you, Chloe?
So as cliche as I want to help people.
You wanted to save the world.
I wanted to save the world.
Funny
world
enough, peace. That's actually how it starts. But actually has a bit of a background. My grandfather was diabetic. When he passed away, he was blind. My other grandfather had a heart disease. And when he passed away, I was there as they literally pulled him out in a blanket to take him to hospital. So that was traumatizing for me. I remember thinking to myself, this can't happen to anyone again around me. So I was like, I will do whatever it takes to understand what happened and make sure it doesn't happen again. So that's how I landed in the I want to save lives thing.
And here you are now. What do you think for you, Harrison, has been the most challenging thing as a young professional from the time when you started teaching? Because as you know, most of the most teachers are quite old.
Yes.
It's very rare that you find a teacher who's 23 or who's 29. Yes, that's coming in now, but back in the day, that's quite rare. Mm. What are the challenges for you?
You know, the challenges are sort of double-edged. First of all, the children are a challenge because they look at you and they see a peer, right? Yeah, so that's the first problem. Like, the kids look at you, they want to call you brah, they want to call you by your name, Harrison. I'm not Harrison, I'm Mr. Mkiza here. So put some respect onto it.
Yeah.
But also another challenge from the colleagues, right? People refer to you as umfanwami, which loosely translates into my boy. Mm. So you constantly need to say, guys, we're in a professional setting. Mm. It's Mr. Mkiza. So that's the first problem.
So that's what you prefer, like Mr.
Mkiza. At work, please call me Mr. Mkiza.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, there's a couple of degrees.
Yeah.
So please.
That name.
And another sort of thing is, once you then get into the classroom and you teach, I remember initially the older teachers used to come in and watch me teach. My methods are unconventional. Mm. So if we're doing poetry, we are going to go to the lawn and sit down and read poetry.
Nice.
If we need to help you understand something, we're going to turn it into a song. And my methods are quite crazy. And the older teachers are just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
That's not how it's done. So the questioning of the methods, if you have anything to say, you can almost see them looking at you and wanting to edit the words come out of your mouth.
Mm.
But, you know, constantly having to say, I can do this, I'm qualified to do this. And just being, I'm going to make mistakes. And if I make mistakes, then you guys are going to help me because you've got the experience.
Yeah.
Those have pretty much been the challenges.
And for you, Clarissa, I mean, I can imagine looking for a lawyer and Clarissa pulls up. You know, do you have that thing where people are like, are you sure you can handle this matter?
No. So luckily I'm still a candidate attorney. So what happens with the law is you do your degree and then you still need to do some practical work before you can actually take on your own matters, your own clients, take anyone's money. So luckily I'm still a candidate. So I practice under a principal in my case. I am part of a very fortunate to be part of Aldrich & Associates.
Oh.
It is. Yeah. So I've got two directors who are absolutely rock stars, brilliant at what they do, and then attorneys under them that also are earning their stripes and have got such good experience, amazing. And then it's baby little me and the other candidates who we kind of do a lot of the legwork, running to court and back and, doing a lot of the more grunt work, paperwork.
Do you sometimes talk to clients?
I do. Before I do sit in the consults and all the things, but I'm not the one advising, luckily not. So it's still a few years before I will take anyone's money in exchange for advice.
Yeah.
But
even your friends.
No, it's a good learning curve. I get so many questions on law and I'm like,
I'm that guy. I've got a friend who is very experienced, who's an advocate. And every time I feel bad, but I do it. I'm like, this is the situation in my hands. What do I do?
Oh,
and it's bad.
And the answer is, it depends. The answer without fail, it's a meme that's actually super true.
Yeah.
It really does depend on so many factors.
What do you think have been the challenges for you?
So definitely gaining articles. Like you said, you just applied for a job and you got it. That's amazing. Mm. So jealous. So there are a lot of people who graduate, you think like every law school in the country, they graduate 200, 300, 500, 600 students, UNISA's thousands, they graduate and then they all want articles to be able to become attorneys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there aren't as many attorneys practicing able to take candidates on as there are who study and graduate.
Mm.
So it is very difficult to find candidacy, but very fortunate that I did get my
Ollie,
contract.
Your challenges?
Well,
when did you start? So you graduated when?
2018.
You were how old?
Was I 25?
Around 25.
Yeah, so first of all, we finish later than everybody else. So I am kind of feeling kind of old. Yeah, so our challenge is, first of all, I'm petite. I'm short.
Yeah.
And I get told I have a baby face. So when I walk in and an elderly man looks at me, they're like, are you touching me? Are you the doctor? No, actually, you the student, right? I'm actually qualified, So sometimes it's a little demeaning, but I understand because they're shocked. They're used to these old people coming in as doctors, The other challenging thing is the long hours, man. We can go 28 hours, and you don't really get rest depending on how busy it is. If there's people dying, you can't sleep, But you're a human being, you're exhausted. So we just go Red Bull, Red Bull, Red Bull. You know, so we are always, always exhausted. And it also takes away from time you spend with your family, because you're working, you miss events, you're not always there, you know, and you lose friendships. Say, people don't understand. They feel like now, that time you actually just don't really have time. And probably one or two things I want to mention is that for me, breaking bad news has been the worst. Like, you know, families have unrealistic expectations sometimes. They feel like once they bring the person to you, you will cure it. Sometimes we can't cure it. And sometimes, you know, it's beyond us, and you have to tell that to the families, and it's actually very difficult. I've cried. You know, you have a meeting with people, you walk out, and I start crying because I'm sitting in a room with grown men and they start crying in front of me, you know. And I always tell them, I'm like, look, I'm not God, you know what I mean? God can do things, miracles and stuff, but from a medical perspective, this is how far we can go. Last but not least, the job crisis. Man, we have graduates going to Cuba. They come from Cuba, they come from India, all the, you know, China universities here, and then they tell us there's no posts. Like, there was a strike.
Cousin who's sitting at home now, a doctor, but is unemployed.
Exactly.
How?
Exactly. So now, even there was a strike in Maritzburg, the doctors, we're sitting there qualified. There's a shortage of doctors, believe me, but there's no money to find us.
I remember the health minister said in parliament 2 months ago in Feb that they've somehow found the money, but it's, my cousin was explaining that it's a week before the end of the financial year. So if they're not getting calls and posts are not being filled now, it's going to be complicated after when the new financial year starts.
Absolutely.
I don't understand. We've got a shortage of doctors, but doctors are sitting at home.
Yeah, they just say there's no money. Each hospital will say, well, we only have 5 posts. Then there's 300 applicants for 5 posts. Really? You know, so it's really difficult, guys. And, you know, it's a problem in South Africa.
It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock. Let's hear from your voice notes on 072-702-1702. I'm hosting young professionals on Across the Desk this morning. Are you a young professional? What's been your experience? What are the advantages? What have been the challenges? And maybe you remember the time when you were among the youngest in your team, or you were a young manager. Share your experiences with us.
Morning, Clement. So I'm in the engineering space. I'm a fitter intern, and I started at the age of like 22 doing my apprenticeship, and I've been working ever since. And that was, and I'm 36 now. You know that I am still one of the youngest in the workplace, which then begs the question that where are these youngsters? So when you see the unemployment rates of these youngsters, I see it literally in my everyday life. Where are these youngsters? Where are the 22-year-olds? Where's the 22-year-old guy that's supposed to be me in 2024? That is really disturbing. It's really disturbing.
Morning, Clement. Garabu here from Bryanston. Shout out to the amazing show as always. To your question about being a young professional, I've always kind of felt that I've been in that space my whole working life. I remember I started working basically in high school, if not right out of high school. So when I got my first corporate job when I was around 22, 23, I'd already had like almost 3 years of work experience, but I was a junior right out the gate. So I did always feel like I was kind of pushing or trying to prove myself even more, even though I'd already been in the workforce for about 3 years to that point. So yeah, and I've kind of always felt that I've had a bit more experience than my age lets on. So I've always kind of felt that I've had to constantly prove myself, which isn't like the best feeling. But in the advantage of that is that I always kind of get given responsibilities and tasks that are above my role per se. But yeah, it's not always the best, but there are advantages. Like you said, this is Garabo from Bryanston.
Hi, Clement and the crew in studio. Great, great show. My name is Zinhle, 26 years old. So I am an academic. Actually, just sort of recently started an emerging academic. So I lecture, and I mean, I always get like surprises when I tell people that. So I relate a lot to Harrison in terms of the teaching aspects, but I'm more within the academic element and also within the space of radio and TV and all of that. So yeah, and most of the time I do happen to find myself as one of the youngest in those spaces, but I think it's always a learning step, and yeah, and also just, of course, they learn from me, I learn from them, you know, intergenerational thing, but also just the thing of, I guess, emerging myself in that and hoping to see even more young people in such spaces. So yeah, amazing, amazing show.
So thank you so much for your WhatsApp voice notes. We'll take more and some calls as well in a moment. I think for me, my experience is what's been a little frustrating is that, you know, as young people, we've got our own way of doing things.
Yeah, we are
a lot more creative.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you work with people who know the established way of doing things.
Sure.
Like, this is the standard way. We've done this for over 40 years.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sure. But the world has evolved and Absolutely. People have evolved. Mm. And this is how I want to do it. And often there are doubts about the things you want to implement, you know. Like, when I think about the show, like, I've come up with, like, the craziest ideas, some of which I've not even implemented because they're just, like, crazy, 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 and maybe we are not ready for them.
Got it.
Do you find that, I mean, you said when you do poetry, you take them out.
Yeah.
Let's go out and let's do that. Do you find sometimes that when you come up with ways that are different of teaching, some of your older colleagues are like, Wenzani?
All the time, all the time. Everything from the way that I dress to the way that I run my class. First of all, kids are allowed to eat in my class. Just keep it clean.
Yo,
because
never
learn how to take care of the space. I mean, you eat at home when you're studying. So when I try to do something new, what I always do is I read policies. So I understand the rules. These are the rules. These are the things that I cannot break because we're in a system here. There are rules, there are policies, there are procedures. So that is always sort of in line. I always make sure. Then with the creativity, it's like, they say this is what I must do. They say this is when I must do it. They don't tell me where and how, so I can play around with that. And that's how I always win it, right? And I also try to not lock heads with the people that have been doing it for 40 years because, listen, there is merit.
Absolutely.
Especially in the teaching profession, us young teachers, we're good with the content. We know the content, but we struggle with methods. Like, we can't, we don't have ways of getting the content into the child's head. So we're good at, this is it, this is what it is, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. If you watch teachers on social media, they're very good with the content. But once you ask the kids, hey, so did you hear what sir was saying? And they'll just give you a blank face and you'll understand that there's a bit of a missing thing. When I think of myself when I was young, the methods that my teachers used to use, I see that, oh wow, these people had a way of drilling it into us and giving us homework and following up. So I respect their methods and I don't want to fight with them, but I always say, so that worked, that worked, that worked. Let me now do this. Let me now do that. Let me now do that. And it's always a give and take. Like, I try as much as possible to not walk in and say, I'm going to change everything. I'm not reinventing the wheel. But maybe let's add something to it. A little bit here and there. Do you know what I mean?
How do you dress up at work? Like, do you dress in, like, normal, formal, how teachers normally wear? Or, you know, I'm a teacher with a leather jacket. And
no, never. Never.
A leather jacket.
I'll never do a leather jacket. But I'm always in formal pants and a formal shirt and formal shoes. And then I'm
still fashionable.
But still very fashionable. Yeah. Very slim, very fashionable. You know, just to inspire the kids, because I also teach at a high school and the kids need a good role model. So one of the things that I do is I always dress well every day. If I don't receive a compliment, I'm just like, didn't do a good job there.
You're not getting that extra mark.
You're not getting that extra mark.
I mean, you don't have much choice. I mean, as a lawyer, there's the way you must dress.
Yeah, so I'm not going to lie, I also did pick this career based on the outfits. I love dressing up. I love, like, suits, like... Yeah. The audience can't see me now, but I'm wearing my little suit jacket and my little high heels.
Yeah.
No, it is very exciting. It is a lot of fun. For court, you're supposed to wear dark colors. So this little white blazer of mine is now not appropriate.
In court.
Yeah, no, they will. In the old days, it used to be very strict. The judge would chase you out of this courtroom for wearing the inappropriate dress.
Yeah.
These days, it's a bit more creative. I've seen some of the young attorneys rock up in, like, tackies. But, like, everyone else there with, like, a stiff brown, a stiff upper lip, being like, oh, these youngsters.
Yeah.
Can't believe.
Well, you don't have to worry much about the dressing code.
No, but we went from wearing...
In the uniform, ne?
Yeah, we went from wearing lab coats, which is so, outdated, but older, you know, clinicians wear them, then we do scrubs now. But you get tired of wearing scrubs and looking like a box. Mm. It does have a benefit though, because then you don't have like patients eyeing you, you know, as you walk, you know. Mm. So, but we try and like make it cute. You wear maybe your scrub top and a bit of jeans and some nice cute sneakers.
But you can't talk heels. I've never seen it.
No, you can't. How are you going to run in heels, you know? No. Your feet are not going to cope. But it's very simple with us. But there's this stigma that doctors don't dress well. Hello, you know, we are the new generation. Yeah. Okay, we're looking cute. Even on Instagram. Hello, boo, you know.
All right, it's 10:32.
Across the Desk with Clement Manyatela on 702.
It's 23 minutes before 11 o'clock on the Across the Desk feature this morning. I'm hosting young professionals. We've got Harrison Mkhize, who is a teacher. He's 29. We've got Clarice Skepas, who is a lawyer at the age of 24. Olim Gleche is a doctor. She is 31 years old. I want to hear from you as well, what your experiences have been on 011-883-0702. Let's start with Dr. Mabatu Mutiba, who's calling us all the way from Mpumalanga. Dr. Mutiba, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, my name is Dr. Mabatu Mutiba. Mm. I'm currently in Rob Ferreira Hospital. So I'm calling from Rob Ferreira Hospital.
Yeah.
So I'm a young doctor. I'm doing my second year internship.
Mm.
So my experience was in this industry is, you know, the most important part was the transition from being a medical student to being a doctor. You know, it's like now you are transitioning from like a medical field. Now you're going to an industry where like you there are responsibilities.
Yeah.
You know, you are not like under somebody's umbrella where like you're protected. Now you, whatever you're doing, it's like your mistake can cost somebody's life, so you need to be responsible. There are medical legal issues that you need to consider, you know, and now whatever you learned in med school, now you have to put it into practice, you know. So it's like, and the theory and the practical might not be exactly as like you know, the theory might not be exactly as like the life event. So imagining like being a first year doctor, a first time being on call and not even sure if like you're gonna be able to manage the emergencies, you know, like certifying death and like things that comes in medicine. So but it was when I get to medicine, it wasn't like as stressful as I thought, you know. So we had like good doctors who made sure that they like hold our hands from like A to Z. They made us like comfortable and they taught us. What I'm trying to say is like we got good mentorship,
yeah,
you know, like
yeah,
good supervision. So it wasn't like as hectic as I thought.
Mm.
So, and another thing that I really experienced is whatever, you know, when you are in med school, you just study as like, okay, this is a condition and the treatment and just like, you know what, it's fine. But here in the normal setting, it's you treat somebody as an individual with like the, you know, a person has like their emotions, their feelings, they go through a lot. So you need to also cover that, you know, because as a doctor, you did like psychology, so you need to be a counselor at the same time.
My scariest thing is you going to someone and telling them your loved one is no more. Like, what prepares you for a moment like that? That's heartbreaking for you, whether you know that person or not.
Mm. So, like I said earlier, that for me, we call it breaking bad news. Mm. That's the worst. From telling someone that the family member's no more, or from telling someone with stage 4 cancer that there's nothing more we can do, and they're watching their family member perish. I mean, we have lectures about it, but when it comes to practical life, and you're seeing a 2-year-old, a 7-year-old, a 12-year-old, and their mom is literally no more.
Oof.
You can't actually be prepared for that. And I mean, we try and support each other in a sense that I never go alone. I'll call a nurse or somebody, you know, and you can't cry in front of them. Sometimes I cry, you know what I mean? But you can't, you have to be strong for them. But it's very, very difficult. And you don't get used to it. Well, I certainly haven't till this point.
Sure. Yeah. That's just so heartbreaking. And the fact that you also have to somehow hold your own emotions because you must somehow appear strong. And yeah, that's a tricky one. Mpo, you calling us from Pretoria. Good morning.
Hello, are you?
Hey, Tara. Sure, sure.
I'm good. I used to be a very young manager, and most of my staff was old enough to be my parents. Mm. So they were struggling with the fact that I was the authority. And when it came to my colleagues at the same level, they just wanted to, you know, they just wanted me to run their errands.
Haibo.
Yeah.
Wait, as a manager?
As a manager.
They're your subordinates?
No. My subordinates, they were just struggling with me being the
Okay, so but your colleagues at the same level?
Policies a lot.
Yeah.
But when it came to my colleagues, they just thought, ah, you're the young one, man. You're a child, man. Just, you know, go buy us this. Go buy us that.
Yeah,
it comes with the field of nursing, eh?
Yeah. Oh, no. So how did you handle that? Did you, like, put your foot down? Because what is
I
that?
Had to. I had to remind them that there's no manpower at work, eh?
Mm.
Yeah, because they would, you know, make you lift their things, that carry their bags, and I'd say, no, that's not why I'm at work.
What? No ways, yeah. No, that's crazy. Mpo in Pretoria, thank you. Have you guys ever experienced that?
Yeah.
Like, I must carry your bag?
I have as well.
Yes. I mean,
are you kidding me?
Yes, where you have to, it's almost like, especially if you're a manager, it's almost like this post was given to a kid, like you're babysitting the post. You're not doing the actual job. So they will want to do it for you. And it's going to be like, oh, no, don't worry. You just go do these little minute things and we'll do the serious stuff. So you can go collect the papers when they come out of the printer. You can just type the things for us. You're almost like an administrator. And it's like, no, actually, I've got my mind to apply and I've got things to do. This is how I handled it. Like, a frank conversation actually helps. I've learned to go toe to toe. On a day where we are going toe to toe, we will go toe to toe. And policies will be thrown around. And boundaries will be established. Just one hard conversation at work.
And the young people always have their machetes ready, hey?
All the time, on site.
I don't know about you guys, but I mean, for me, you're a young doctor and the nurses are much older than you. Oh, mama, if I walk into a store, I'll be like, "Sawubona, ma." And they're like, "Yes, nganyami," like my child. So now you have to give instructions. You have to tell them. And just like cultural hierarchy, you know, an elderly person tells you what to do. So now they want to, you know, they want to help. And I know they mean well, but sometimes, you know, it's your learning that has the upper hand. So that's why we give the instructions. So now I remember I had not a fallout, but one nurse, I was asking her politely to do something. She's like, "No, it's not that, it's this and that." She literally refused to do what I asked her. And then the patient started crashing. And I was like, can we please do it? She's like, "Oh yeah, yes, doctor, you are right," you know. So those are sometimes the challenges. Not everyone. I mean, nurses are lovely. They support us. They teach us. But sometimes that cultural hierarchy that I'm your mom and you are my child sort of interferes with the professional relationship between the two.
Chris, you calling from Kagiso. Hi.
Hi, Clement.
Hey, Tara.
Let me tell you, it's an old story, you know. It's a very, very old story. I'm not sure if it's going to be interesting or not. You know, I was appointed lecturer at Soweto College of Education immediately after I qualified. So I was a third-year student the year before. Then the next year, I became a lecturer. So some of the people that I was teaching were the people that I was sitting with during lunch in the past 2 years, you know. So, and the pressure was very, the pressure was very, very high. And because I only had a diploma at that time, but then I was pressurized into completing my degree and my honors at that time. Because the staff, they were qualified, they had master's degrees, some others had doctorates, you know. So I was under pressure from both sides to transition from being a student and be a lecturer at the same time. And the lecturers that were teaching me, being my colleagues that time, you know. So now the pressure was unbearable. I was only 23. Can you just imagine some of the student teachers were 25, others 30, and even others 40. You know, so the pressure was very, very high. Yeah, it was very, very demanding pressure. But then it taught me something. It taught me that I need to work hard. After I quit teaching, I went into the banking sector. You know, I I pressed myself, you know, I even ended up working for all the four big banks in the country.
Jeez, you know? Okay. So when, and are you retired now, so Chris? How old are you now?
Yes, I'm turning 60 in December. Wow. So I am semi-retired because I'm now a pastor, actually.
A pastor?
Yes, I'm a pastor now, yeah.
Oh, right. Pastor Chris,
unbelievable.
Amen
story,
to that. Full circle moment. Thank you for calling us, Chris in Kagiso. After the break, I want to hear from the young professionals how they, one, maintain that work balance, but also try and still be young people and have fun and not be always at work like Koli, who's on call. Jay, the friends are like, let's do lunch. Oh, I'm on call today. How do they manage that? It's 13 minutes before 11 o'clock.
Across the desk with Clement Manyatela on 702.
10 minutes now before 11 o'clock. We're wrapping up our conversation with the young professional. But I'm also taking your calls and your WhatsApps as well. I want to know from you guys how you balance work and like just being young and having fun. Clarice, how do you do that?
I'm going to lie to you if I say that I do have balance.
Yeah.
At this point, it's like a 12-hour workday, so not really a lot going on in the week.
Day.
So you kind of live for the weekend. But other than that, like I have blocked out like certain things in my calendar. Like I go to a youth group once a week and I go to therapy once a week. My principals.
You do therapy once a week?
Yes, I
do. Yay.
Yay. We love mental health as an attorney.
Yes.
But yeah, so I have communicated that with my principals, my directors. They all know this time, they allow that time to be mine. And yeah, if I don't block it out like that,
So weekends, that's when you've got time to have lunch.
Yeah, then I'm like, I see everyone.
Okay.
Parents, friends, church, see that everyone.
Yeah. Do you have activities? Do you run? Do you play golf? Or are you just more, let's do lunch, let's do dinner, or do you've got stuff?
I do gym.
Okay.
Shout out to Rosebank Virgin Active for being fitness. The prettiest gym in the world.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've got friends there as well. But
yeah, that's nice. So.
And some paddle now again. You'll see me.
Oh, I love paddle. Oh,
so good.
Yeah, I just don't have time for it now. You see, we're always here at the workplace. What about you?
Okay, first of all, in our profession, balance does not exist. You don't have a life as a student. And even when you work, you work for long hours. When you're back, you're tired and sleeping. So we try. I mean, we work on weekends, but on free weekends, you try. But also, you want to sleep. You stressed. I mean, I love the spa, so I will definitely make time to go to the spa. But I promise you, we miss out on a lot. And, you know, it really interferes with friendships and stuff like that. But we try. But I can tell you now, you know, with medicine, you give your life.
So, Jolo, when do you date?
Jolo.
Where are you going on a dinner with your boo?
Listen, man, you do make time for the Mjolo, you know, Mjolo the pandemic. Man, you'll have a Red Bull and you'll go and, you know.
And you're sleepy during dinner.
You know what I mean? You know, but you need people that understand.
Yeah.
And you need someone who's not looking for the ideal wife because I'm not there sometimes. You're not getting breakfast, lunch, supper, homie. Like, you know, you'll get what I can give you.
Yeah.
So, hey, man, there's no balance, but we try.
Yeah.
We try.
Harrison, I mean, it's more trickier for you because you do like 1,000 jobs.
Yes, but the thing about it is that that's why I do these other jobs because that's how I relax. When I'm on radio, I have as much fun as possible. When I'm on TV, I'm also having as much fun as possible. And when I'm in a classroom, I'm teaching. Then I make time for friends. Like I make time for gym, I make time for friends. Like I prioritize those things. It becomes a point. I'm very deliberate and very intentional with the relationships that I harbor. And I also put in the hours, like between 3 a.m. to like 6 a.m. I'll be up working.
Why are you up at 3 a.m.?
Preparing. Like I'm preparing the lessons. I'm moderating teachers' stuff. Like from 3 to like 5, and then 5 to 6 I'm getting ready for work, and then
half
past
6
I'm out. I'll sleep at like 9, half past 9, 10.
Okay, at least.
So it's enough.
Yeah.
I also sort of put in the hours to do the work that I need to do, because the last thing I want is for that thing to stick, to say he's incompetent because he's young.
Yeah.
So when others are sleeping, I put in at least 2-3 hours just to set myself apart.
Yeah.
So when I rock to work, I can be young and I can be boss.
I think that's a dynamic as well that I think we should touch on, because that's my experience as well. Like I mean, a lot of people think when you do a three-hour show, you arrive here like at 9 o'clock, you do the show. But there's a lot of work that gets into it. And I'm an over-preparer. Like, I want to know the subject more than the person I'm interviewing, who's a guest. And I think part of that is because as a young person, there's just that pressure to, you don't want to be seen as, oh yeah, Ngani, he's young and incompetent. Or, so you end up over-preparing. Do you find that with you as well, Clarice?
Yeah, definitely. Just because every day is so different. The types of law you see in litigation is just astounding. So I do spend a lot of hours reading, doing extra reading especially, just because you need to figure out what you did today. So then you kind of, at the back end, then you go like, shoot, what are these rules? What did I, because you practice it. And then at the end, you go like, oh, I actually need to do some extra reading. So that is also like a 2-3 hour extra in the day. But it'll all pay off in spades, definitely.
Yeah. Dr. Nandi, you are in Rosebank. Good morning.
Good morning, Clement.
Hey, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. And you? Mine was not so much in the professional side, but in the community. I was running a very huge, successful doctor's practice in the Transkei, in the then Transkei. You know, I used to, like, people used to come and used to sleep at my place because I have this passion and I really tried my best to treat people. I was at the age of 31.
Yeah.
So now I've got this huge 5-series BMW. That's when BMW changed the shape. I don't know if you were born then, Clement. That was 1989.
I wasn't.
There used to be a square. Yes, you weren't. Yeah. There used to be a square BMW.
Uh-huh.
And then they changed to the current shape. And there were only two of us in the Ventrans guy who had this car.
Yo.
It was myself. I had a 525 and Bandu Olomisa had a 535. They were all dodging gray. Now I am in this town where I'm practicing and I stopped at the robot. And then Kukolo Tata, he was a lawyer, probably in his 50s. He asked me to roll down the window. And then he says to me, where they know it has Glenda Wutanga Lemot.
So you're supposed to buy a Tez?
Exactly. Because I was 15, I was like 50 kg and hit one, and I was doing well. So I just giggled. He was also saying it with tongue in cheek. So, like, why we are like, EP Tez? That kind of thing.
Yeah. All right. What a lovely story, Dr. Nandi. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. She's calling us from Rosebank. Any advice for young professionals? Let's start with you. Young people who are about to, or they're already in the system, whether in teaching, in any industry, what advice do you have for them?
First of all, for me, it's like frequent yourself to the policy. Make sure that you know what policy says, because you don't want to find yourself on the wrong side of policy. Number two, the stereotype is already there that young people are uninspired and entitled. So put in the hours, like really put in the hours, even if it's like 4 or 5 hours a week where you're actually doing your work so that you can set yourself apart. Number three, don't forget to respect the people, the older people. We do come from that place. Like, you can say certain things respectfully. You can set up a certain boundary to say, hi ma'am, please don't call me your son. Respectfully, you know, just set up your boundaries, know your policies, and put in the hours. And don't forget to have fun. Like, we're young people, so what sets you apart is the fact that you are a fun teacher. So don't now want to be Mr. Woodhams, which was my maths teacher, who was very slow when he speaks. No, you're young, be energetic. And last but not least, especially to the younger teachers, the children are not your friends. They will never be your friends. Always hold that position of saying you are the teacher and they are the students. Don't cross that line.
Yeah.
I would say definitely before you enter the career of law, you must definitely know what your why is, your quote unquote, what your purpose is. If you just want to do this for the money, you're going to hate it. If you want to do it for the outfits, you're going to hate it. If you want to do it for just saving the world, you're going to hate it. You must really know from the get-go why you're doing this, because when it gets hard, and it will get very hard, then you must have that to fall back on, for sure.
Oli?
So, I mean, first and foremost, you need to be sure of the fact that you want to do medicine, because it's like the years are crazy, you know, and you don't have a life, you know, you really, really need to be sure that it's part of your purpose or you really, really love it. I say it's a calling, you know, it like pulls you to it.
Yeah.
Because when the challenges come, the long hours, you know, when you're feeling drained, that carries you. But more than anything, I'd say hard work, commitment and sacrifice. Mm. You need to be willing to work hard. It does pay off. The career is very rewarding. You've got to be committed. You put in those hours studying. You put in those hours and be kind to patients, you know, like you need to love people. You can't, you know, interact with people and you don't love people. And again, like I said, sacrifice. You need to be willing to sacrifice your time, sacrifice your heart, your soul, your tears, your sweat, everything. And it really, really pays off.
All right. Oli, Clarice and Harrison, thank you so much, guys, for making time for us this morning.
Thank you.